Today on Question Period, a transformational Supreme Court decision that doubles the population of Indigenous people in Canada, and a controversial new law that has the potential to touch all of us in some way. A long-awaited victory. A celebration. After the Supreme Court ruled that the federal government is now responsible for at least 600,000 Métis and non-status Indians.
The Métis have waited a damn long time for this, and no more exclusion, no more excuses.
Leaving them with negotiating powers on things like land treaties, tax exemptions, education, and more.
And we'll be engaging not just on our own, but with Indigenous leadership to figure out what the path is forward.
How will this affect the government's bottom line? Plus,
this is an historic day for our country.
A controversial new law that divides Canadians.
It's a real struggle for the medical profession.
Parliamentarians have 5 weeks to debate and vote on new assisted dying legislation. Will the contentious bill get parliamentary approval? For more on this, I'm joined by the Justice Minister, Jody Wilson-Raybould. Thank you for joining us.
No, my pleasure.
So I have to ask you, a lot of people are surprised that the government was so narrow in its definition of what would be allowable for assisted suicide. Why so narrow and why so cautious?
Well, we had the benefit of hearing from many stakeholders, organizations, and individuals in terms of what we were going to put forward as our federal response to the Supreme Court of Canada decision in Carter. And we believe that the approach that we put forward is the best approach for Canada now, balancing the need for and recognition of personal autonomy with protecting the vulnerable while appreciating and respecting the conscience rights of medical practitioners.
But you have this situation where people who are will be dealing with dementia or other degenerative diseases wanting to be able to do advanced consent, and you said no to that. The committee had said it would be a good idea, and many other countries do the same. Why?
Well, recognizing that this is an incredibly emotional, sensitive issue, and I do recognize that individuals are suffering. But given the time frame that we had to respond to the Supreme Court's decision, our deadline to have legislation in place is June the 6th. Issues like advanced directives, issues like mature minors, mental illness require us to have further study. It's written into the legislation that we will undertake further study on these more controversial issues to be able to gain the evidence that is required upon which we can make decisions about the risks and the benefits with respect to
so
these three
the
items.
Government at this particular point is would not undergo any further changes at the parliamentary committee because of the tight deadline. You have to have this passed by June, correct?
We are required to respond to the Supreme Court decision by June the 6th. It is a compressed time frame. Having said that, we continue to welcome a robust discussion, debate within Parliament and certainly at committees to ensure that we have found the best solution that we can bring forward to meet the court deadline.
On Friday, the Supreme Court struck down minimum sentences for drug crimes. Your party campaigned against minimum sentences. Are we going to now rewrite all of these minimum sentences?
Well, as you know, in my mandate letter from the Prime Minister, I've been tasked with doing a comprehensive overview of the criminal justice system, including sentencing reform. Such an overview hasn't been done since the early 1980s. We're not entirely against mandatory minimums for serious crimes, but certainly recognize in our review of the mandatory minimum penalties that we need to ensure that we are compliant with the Charter, and we're undertaking that review right now.
And that judges have discretion.
I think it's important, and I've said this before as a former Crown Prosecutor, that we provide judges who are faced with individual circumstances in their courtroom have the ability to have discretion about how they sentence individuals in particular cases.
The Supreme Court also ruled last week that Canada's 700,000 Métis and non-status Indians are Indians, and that means, I would assume, that they are going to be entitled to tax-free status, some of the social programs, the education that are available to First Nations. Is that not right from your reading of that?
We thank the Supreme Court for their decision in the Cap Daniels case. Thank them for the clarity that it's brought around this issue. We certainly are reading the decision very carefully and will ensure that we continue to work in partnership with the Métis Nation and non-status Indians to ensure that this is the approach to ensuring that we're working jointly with Indigenous peoples in this country to create the space and foster a situation to build a nation-to-nation relationship. This is our opportunity.
But if they're considered Indians, and they clearly are entitled to the same benefits that Aboriginal status Indians are entitled to, which is education, tax-free status, perhaps land-based, I'm not sure. For example, $8.4 billion that your government announced in the budget, additional money for First Nations, presumably that half of that, wouldn't it be available for, or more, or you have to tap into more money from the government to provide money for these people?
Well, these are discussions that we're going to continue to have, and I recognized and watched the Métis Nation and leaders embrace the Supreme Court decision, and our commitment is to ensure that we operationalize or implement that decision, but we do it in an appropriate way that respects the rights of the Métis Nation and non-status Indians, and I will work with my colleagues to the best of our ability to ensure that we create the space.
But aren't they entitled to that money based on this new rule? Wouldn't they be entitled to it?
Well, again, we're going to continue to have these discussions and recognize what the Supreme Court has said and recognize the Métis Nation in this country.
We have this outdated Indian Act, which everybody agrees, First Nations, everybody. It's paternalistic. It's been around forever. And it's many ways racist. With the Supreme Court ruling on Métis and non-status, isn't there a time now to rewrite the Indian Act and to make it more reflective of the reality today and the challenges facing First Nations people, whether they're status or non-status?
Well, in my previous capacity and certainly still as the Minister of Justice, I've always made it very clear that the Indian Act represents an impoverished notion of government for Indigenous peoples in this country. And I don't believe it's a matter of rewriting the Indian Act. It's a matter of ensuring that we create the space and build the mechanisms at the direction of Indigenous peoples when they're ready, willing, and able to decolonize, to move beyond the Indian Act, that they have a partner in the federal government that will assist them in rebuilding their nations.
I have to ask you then about Attawapiskat, the suicide crisis there. And you even had a case where there was a suicide pact amongst 13, including a 9-year-old girl. It didn't happen. How come this is happening in this day and age?
Well, with respect to Attawapiskat, it's an incredibly disturbing situation that we all have to take responsibility to address. I really welcomed the emergency debate that we had in the House of Commons the other night that really elevated this issue, that it's not just an Indigenous issue, this is a Canadian issue, and it's a tragedy that such a circumstance could exist in a country as wealthy as ours. We need to address the immediate concerns, and our government is working to address those immediate concerns in the community. But the situation in Attawapiskat is a situation, as you know, that exists in other communities across the country. And we need to address the immediate needs, but we also need to create the environment and the foundation to ensure that people can have control over their own destiny, that there's a creation of hope that comes from being able to be self-determining.
Minister, thanks for coming in to speak to us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
After 17 years, the Supreme Court ruling on the Métis and non-status Indians was emotional for all involved.
I don't know what else to say, but I'm very proud and I wish my father was here. This completes his what I believe is his life's work.
That was Gabriel Daniels, the son of the late Métis leader Harry Daniels, who was one of the original plaintiffs in this case, and Mr. Daniel joins me now. I'm also joined by Dwight Dorey, the National Chief of the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. He is here representing non-status Indians. Mr. Daniels, it must have been a very emotional day for you when the Supreme Court ruled on Thursday. I knew your father. He was a big, cheerful guy. He always had a smile on his face, but he was a fighter.
Yeah.